VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And good afternoon. Welcome to Crosstalk here on VCY America. And friends, we're having a news roundup day here today in that periodically we invite guests on the program, and Friday is their only day that they can be available for the program. And such is the case for tomorrow. As Lord willing, we're going to be having Dr. Quentin Van Meter with us from the American College of Pediatricians, and going to be addressing the issues of transgenderism, gender identity, gender dysphoria within youth. And we'll be addressing that program tomorrow. And so we have backed up a news roundup day here for today. And we thank you so much for tuning in as we seek to keep you informed through Crosstalk of many, many critical issues. And friends, there are so many stories coming out. We could actually have a news roundup every single day because we weed out so many stories of things that are going on. But certainly there are certain items and stories that rise to the top. And really, I trust these kinds of programs burden you for our society to recognize time is shortening between now and the time of the Lord's return. And we must do all we can to be the light to others, that is to share the good news of the gospel in such a time as this. We're going to begin with a story here today compiled from WND.com and from Breitbart as well. And it is the Department of Homeland Security is establishing a board to counter what they call disinformation. It's going to be headed by a former advisor to the government of Ukraine who declared that Hunter Biden's infamous laptop was a Russian influence operation. DHS Secretary Mayorkas testified to a House panel on Wednesday that the board would be tasked with countering disinformation regarding homeland security, particularly related to Russia and illegal immigration. Political reporter Nina Jankowicz, who previously had served as a disinformation fellow at the Wilson Center, a Washington think tank, is going to be heading the board as executive director. Jankowicz has been an advocate for social media censorship and regulation. In October of 2020, Jankowicz testified to the House Select Committee on Intelligence on the dangers of misinformation and conspiracy theories and how to stop it online. Disinformation is a threat to democracy, she warned, and criticizes the government and social media platforms who have all but abdicated the responsibility to address domestic disinformation. During her testimony, she recommended that Congress start spending more taxpayer dollars to fund a robust public media. I thought they already had that through NPR. Well, and work on a global effort to combat disinformation. Further, President Obama, or recently, former President Obama, currently is engaged in a campaign against disinformation as well. I wonder if there's any connection. The New York Times reported last week ahead of the appearance at Stanford University that in many private meetings and public appearances over the last year, the former president has waded deeply into the public fray over misinformation and disinformation, warning that the scourge of falsehoods online has eroded the foundations of democracy at home and abroad. Or maybe it's just exposing what is really taking place. Talking about disinformation, Dr. Anthony Fauci says that to preserve his integrity, I'm looking at WND.com, to preserve his integrity, he had to publicly correct President Trump on the validity of ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine as treatments for COVID-19. In an interview with CNN, the director of National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases was asked by Casey Hunt about what life has been like for you during the pandemic. I know you have gone from a hero to most Americans to someone who is now viewed as a divisive figure, Hunt said. I can't imagine that it was something you thought would happen to you when you took your job way back in 1984. Any significance to 84? Well, here is how Fauci responded. Let's listen in.
The divisiveness during the Trump administration, it was no secret that I had to do something that was not pleasant and not comfortable, and I didn't desire it, was I had to be publicly correcting misrepresentation on the part of the president and on the part of people in the administration. you know, the people who were talking about hydroxychloroquine and about ivermectin and about that the virus is going to go away and it's going to disappear. I had to maintain my own integrity as well as my responsibility to the public to tell them the truth. That clearly alienated a lot of people. And that alienation has taken on a much bigger issue now where the elements in political elements in society have determined that now they're going to villainize me. So they're going to take the person who was very much admired for reasons of caring for the public health and making it a symbol of everything that's wrong with the world is me. Things like that, I'm destroying democracy. I'm taking away people's freedom. I'm doing all kinds of crazy things. I should criminalize me, arrest me, kill me, hang me, whatever they want to do. That led to a lot of death threats, which is the reason why I have to have security. But it is purely a reflection of profound and really unfortunate divisiveness in society, which spills over beyond me. You could see it in everything that goes on. I mean, we have gotten into an arena or an era of what I call the normalization of lies. So lies that were obvious 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, that people would say, wow, that's crazy. You can't say that. It's like it's accepted now. So anybody can say whatever they want, completely fabrication, completely conspiracy theory, and it's okay. And it's not really okay, but people are so used to it now, it's become, as I say, and I use that terminology because I thought about it a lot, it's the normalization of untruths.
Interesting indeed. Now, remember, Fauci accuses Trump of disinformation, but let me replay a clip. I think we heard it maybe last week on the program from some years back when Fauci was asked if somebody already had the flu, if they should be getting a immunization shot, should they be getting a flu shot? Just as he says everybody, regardless if you had COVID or not, you need to have a COVID shot. Well, let's go back and visit what he had said about that at this time, because he's talking about all this disinformation out there, but might he be a part of it?
The vaccination, that's a very, very small minority of it, and unfortunately that appears to be the case with you.
But she's had the flu for 14 days. Should she get a flu shot?
Well, no. If she got the flu for 14 days, she's as protected as anybody can be, because the best vaccination is to get infected yourself.
And so
if she really has the flu, she definitely doesn't need a flu vaccine. If she really has the flu.
She right. should not get it again.
No, she doesn't need it because it's the most potent vaccination is getting infected yourself.
Very interesting. Interesting indeed. Well, incidentally, another two boys died in their sleep days after receiving their second COVID-19 vaccine. The vaccine reaction has the story going on, but let's listen into a news report from NTD News.
Just days after getting their second COVID-19 vaccine, two teenage boys died in their sleep. Medical experts have been investigating what happened, and they've now released their report. An epidemiologist says it adds to a body of evidence that confirms Pfizer's vaccine can lead to death in children. NTD's Miguel Moreno reports.
To attend class in some parts of the country, kids need to be vaccinated against COVID-19. The federal government says they're safe, but gives them warning labels of what could lead to death.
This myocarditis warning that is out on Pfizer Moderna is very serious.
Epidemiologist Peter McCullough says this in light of a new report. Its authors investigated the cases of two teenage boys from different states. Both of them had received second doses of the Pfizer vaccine, only to die a few days later in their sleep. McCullough says that in his view, the study confirms that Pfizer's vaccines led to the deaths of the teenagers.
That's the conclusion now, and it's the conclusion of several reports in the peer-reviewed literature. This isn't the only one. So it's clear that our FDA warnings on these vaccines are valid and justified, and these reports indicate in some cases it's fatal.
The report was published by the College of American Pathologists, which is considered the largest organization of board-certified pathologists. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, known as the CDC, lists the myocarditis warning on its website for both Pfizer and Moderna's vaccines, but no mention that myocarditis could lead to death. We contacted the CDC, but we haven't heard back. Miguel Moreno, NTD News.
And friends, interesting story there. And also, by the way, from as The Hill is reporting, the Food and Drug Administration Monday gave its first full approval for a COVID-19 treatment for children under 12. They granted approval for the treatment of remdesivir. Still, the FDA stresses that remdesivir is not a replacement for vaccination, and there's still no authorized vaccine for children under 5, but they granted full approval for remdesivir in young kids. Liberty Counsel reporting that Governor Bill Lee, out of Tennessee, signed Senate Bill 2188 that allows ivermectin, an award-winning antiviral drug, to be available for the treatment of COVID-19 without a prescription in Tennessee. The state Senate overwhelmingly voted 66 to 20, the House 22 to 6 in favor of the bill. It states that a pharmacist can provide ivermectin to a patient who is 18 years of age or older, pursuant to a valid pharmacy practice agreement containing a non-patient specific prescription order and standardized procedures developed. But it basically means that adults can explain their symptoms to the pharmacist, fill out a sheet listing any pre-existing conditions and other medications they're taking. The pharmacist then can determine the right doses, but ivermectin now becoming easily available in the state of Tennessee. Well, things are not so good in the Grand Rapids, Michigan area. As LifeSiteNews.com is reporting, a Michigan family is planning to take legal action against a hospital for allegedly refusing to put their adopted Ukrainian daughter on the wait list for a kidney transplant. Why? Because she hasn't gotten the experimental COVID-19 shots. Christian homeschooling parents Daniel and Jenna Campau have three biological, two adopted Ukrainian children, including a 17-year-old girl that the family adopted last year. Diagnosed with renal failure, their adopted daughter is on twice-a-week dialysis treatment to keep her single remaining kidney functioning, making getting a transplant a matter of urgency. However, hospital officials at Spectrum Health Helen DeVos Children's Hospital in Grand Rapids are reportedly preventing the girl from getting on the wait list for a transplant because she won't get the required COVID-19 jab due to religious objection. From ADF Media, the following quote's been attributed to the Alliance Defending Freedom legal counsel Greg Chalfin, and that is regarding the governor's signing Monday of HB 2449, a bill that ensures that residents of long-term care facilities are able to receive visits from clergy during a state of emergency, an extension of protections passed last year for patients in hospitals. The religious freedom of Arizonans should be protected, especially during a public crisis. Over the past 2 years, too many people were denied visits from clergy, even in end-of-life situations. HB 2449 ensures that that this does not happen in long-term care facilities like nursing homes by allowing residents to receive visits from the clergy. Well, friends, we're going to take a quick break here in our news roundup day on Crosstalk, in that we're going to come back and discuss a number of energy-related issues that are taking place in the news, and even John Kerry calling for a 10-year expiration date of natural gas. We'll be back in just 1 minute. This is Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
To Genesis with Dr. John Morris, geologist and president of the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, fossils are found in some pretty strange places sometimes, aren't they?
Yes, indeed they are, Chris. Usually they're found entombed in sedimentary rock, which originally was sediments that were laid down by moving water, but since then has hardened into stone, allowing the dead things to harden into fossils. But sometimes the fossils are found in truly weird areas. In a place in Britain, mud continually bubbles up out of an underground spring. It's not just water, it's mud. But with the mud often pops up a fossil. It might be a clam or a brachiopod, but it's in a pristine state of preservation. This is weird, but one thing I know is that it fits nicely within the general picture of the great flood of Noah's day, the one that's mentioned back in Genesis.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
Some of you are wondering what's going on. Has the calendar changed or what? Why is there a news roundup on a Thursday? Normally it's Friday, isn't it? Well, indeed, we try to have them on Fridays, but in this particular case, our guest was only available tomorrow, and looking forward to having Dr. Van Meter with us from the American College of Pediatricians dealing with this matter of gender dysphoria and transgenderism, the what about puberty blockers and all the matters that are going on this issue, and we'll bring some common sense to the topic here tomorrow. So we continue on with the news roundup today from townhall.com. President Biden's energy secretary, Jennifer Granholm, by the way, who's known for laughing when asked about the Biden administration, what they would do to lower gas prices. Well, kind of like Kamala Harris, the vice president, is now talking about how the whole country should look to California as an example for its plan to eradicate fossil fuels and go fully electric, something that hasn't gone so well in California. Asked about L.A.'s plan to have zero emissions by 2028 and Governor Newsom's plan for California to only sell electric vehicles by 2035, Secretary Granholm said that the state's goals are real and declared that California is on the leading edge of this clearly. The whole country looks to what California is doing, she said, noting that some people don't like what California is doing, but California is really thinking ahead into the future. Oh, my. This is the head of our energy department. From Market Watch, President Biden's climate envoy, John Kerry, says he's putting the natural gas industry on notice, suggesting it has a decade at most to solve for the emissions that are driving Earth's temperatures dangerously higher. CNN telling us in another rollback of a Trump-era policy, President Biden's Department of Energy on Tuesday finalized a new efficiency rule to phase out older high-energy incandescent light bulbs. Haven't we been down this road before? The new rule states that light bulbs must emit a minimum of 45 lumens per watt. That's a measure of brightness. Well, the rule is an effective nail in the coffin for the incandescent bulb, which uses a higher wattage than LED bulbs. Old bulbs that don't meet the new standard will need to be phased out of production within 75 days. And the Department of Energy will work with manufacturers to ease the transition. Full enforcement of the rule will go into effect in July of 2023, which is the deadline for retailers to stop selling the incandescent bulb. Fox Business is reporting that California lawmakers appear likely to pause the annual summer increase in the state's gasoline tax ahead of a May 1st deadline. But the governor there has previously expressed support for more pain at the pump, wanting to implement a 5.6% tax hike scheduled to go into effect on July 1st. And let's see, lawmakers are certainly to fail to stop this gas tax increase from taking place because they need to do so by Sunday and yet to introduce a bill on the matter. California is the price of gas there reaching $5.68 a gallon. One place in California is at Mono County, an average price of $6.61 a gallon. They are the nation's highest gas tax state, 51 cents a gallon. But that would raise it to 53.9 cents per gallon at the beginning of July. We have been talking about the food supply shortages, and we see what's taking place. Tom DeWeese has been with us on the war on beef, and we're seeing much taking place. Well, here's another matter going on for modern farmer. This year, California farmers have been given a financial incentive to not plant crops. Much of the state is already experiencing extreme drought conditions as part of a $2.9 billion plan to try and keep water flowing in California rivers. The state will pay farms to keep thousands of acres vacant this growing season. Both state and federal officials, as well as some major water companies in the region, signed the plan. Their hope is to keep upwards of 824,000 acre feet of water every year in the Sacramento-San Joaquin River Delta. Central Valley is responsible for a quarter of the nation's crops. Again, folks, if you think food prices are high now, you ain't seen nothing yet. Zero Hedge is reporting that the FBI Cyber Division published a notice this past week warning about increased cyber attack threats on agricultural cooperatives. Comes at a time when a curious string of fires and explosions are damaging major food processing plants across the country. Ransomware actors may be more likely to attack agriculture cooperatives during critical planting and harvest seasons, disrupting operations, causing financial loss, and negatively impacting the food supply chain, the notice read. Adding 2021 and early 2022, ransomware attacks on farming co-ops could affect the current planting season by disrupting the supply of seeds and fertilizer. The agency warned that a significant disruption of grain production could impact the entire food chain, since grain is not only consumed by humans, but also animal feed. In addition, a significant disruption of grain and corn production could impact commodities, trading, and stocks. The FBI's warning comes as nearly two dozen food processing plant facilities across Canada and the U.S. have experienced a string of fires, plane crashes, and explosions, according to the Western Standard. The most recent incidents were fires at two Oregon-based food processing plants. One on Monday night, a fire destroyed Azure Standard's joint headquarters and warehouse facilities. The second was an explosion Tuesday at a Sharer's Foods plant. This is all happening as the Ukraine-Russian conflict has disrupted the global food supply chain. Food prices are at record highs, and the Rockefeller Foundation just released their time frame of when a massive immediate food crisis may begin. They say in the next 6 months. So we have this string of curious events taking place at food processing plants. We have California paying farmers not to plant crops. And certainly we see what's going on with Ukraine right now as they have become the breadbasket for Europe, and seeing all the destruction that is taking place there and not being able to plant crops this spring. WND.com is reporting the founder of FedEx and CEO Fred Smith says that Democratic policies are clearly to blame in part for the current levels of inflation that the U.S. is experiencing. The consumer price index surged 8.5% in March compared to a year ago, up from 7.9% in February. The rate was the highest since December of 1981. By way of comparison, the month that former President Trump left office, January of 2021, the inflation rate then was 1.4%. The Federalist is reporting that when you hear 8% inflation bandied about but feel certain that your costs are rising at a far higher rate, you're not crazy. The Labor Department's March inflation numbers released this month skyrocketed past February's, hitting a 12-month increase of 8.5%, the steepest annual increase since 81. That's no small figure. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, in the average U.S. city, ground beef is up 14.9% since last March. Boneless stew meat up 24.3%. Bacon is up 23.1%. Boneless chicken breast up 17.6%. Eggs are up 25.9%. Milk is up 17%. Frozen orange juice concentrate up 18%. And ground coffee up 15.8%. Meanwhile, fuel oil has jumped a whopping 71.5%. Utility gas up 23.3%. Many of these urban numbers don't even capture how steeply prices have risen for middle America. However, in the Midwest, ground beef has risen 24.5%, almost 10% percentage points more than the urban average. In all likelihood, the prices are not done climbing. Investment firm Evermore ISI projected the price of chicken breast to jump at a year-over-year rate of up to 70% in the first half of 2022, with beef and pork prices rising 20%. It's amazing, folks, what is taking place. Washington Examiner telling us major foreign oil companies are gearing up to embrace the left's climate agenda publicly. Europe's largest oil companies want to see a national energy tax imposed on Americans. According to the Wall Street Journal, oil giants including Royal Dutch Shell and British Petroleum are pressuring America's largest oil industry trade groups to back a national carbon tax. Both Shell and BP appear to be threatening to leave the American Petroleum Institute unless the Institute backs the tax plan. The carbon tax under consideration would start at upwards of $50 per ton, roughly amounting to $2 trillion in tax hikes that would increase gas prices by nearly 46 cents per gallon, according to the Congressional Research Service. The tax would be pegged to increase with inflation. There's another troubling issue going on, folks, and that is President Joe Biden told teachers gathered at the White House that school children are like yours when they're in the classroom. He spoke at the Teacher of the Year event held Wednesday, where he urged teachers to help students gain confidence enough to know what they can do. But this emphasis of telling the teachers that children are yours when they're in the classroom. Let's listen to what he had to say.
These aren't, we always talk about these children. They're not someone else's children. They're our children. And they are the kite strings that literally lift our national ambitions aloft in a literal sense. Think about it. If you got to do one thing to make sure the nation succeeded in the next two generations, what would you do? You'd want, I would say, literally, have the best educated public in the world. Have our students gain confidence enough to know what they can do, to reach in. We have an obligation. We have an obligation to help them teach and reach their potential. You've heard me say it many times about our children, but it's true. They're all our children. And the reason you're the teachers of the year is because you recognize that. They're not somebody else's children. They're like yours when they're in the classroom.
They're not like somebody else's children. They're like yours when they're in the classroom. And that's the persona. And I thank the Lord for good, godly teachers that are in schools. So it's not a sweeping comment. But this is what's happening. And this is why they are going against parental values in so many cases. And values that children bring into the classrooms, and secretly promoting an LGBT agenda, and secretly putting in their curricula, CRT, and other matters as well. Because after all, they're not your children when they're in the classroom. They belong to the teacher. WesternJournal.com is reporting two candidates in Arizona looking to the future after the troubled 2020 election with a lawsuit looking to ban the use of machines to count votes in the Grand Canyon state. Republican gubernatorial candidate Carrie Lake filed the lawsuit seeking the ban, contending that the machines are too easily hacked, making them vulnerable to criminals hoping to corrupt elections, according to the Arizona Daily Star. She's joined by the lawsuit by Secretary of State hopeful Mark Finchem, also a Republican, who said that the machines and computer components based in other counties make the machines unreliable and dangerous. Governor DeSantis continues to be in the news. Out of the state of Florida, signed a bill into law Monday that will create a new police unit specifically to deal with the election laws in his state. Florida Senate Bill 524 requires the state's voter rolls to be annually reviewed and updated to remove ineligible voters, tighten voter ID requirements, and increase penalties for some election-related crimes. Most notably, it establishes the Office of Election Crimes and Security with the Department of State. From the National Review, the New York Court of Appeals has rejected the congressional district maps drawn up by the Democrat-controlled state legislature. That happened yesterday, gerrymandering to the nth degree. The court, which is the highest court in the state, ruled 4-3 in favor of a complaint brought by Republican voters against the district maps. And so they are going to be setting up an appointed individual to draw up maps for the state of California. I'm sorry, for the state of New York. Let's take a quick break here. I've got some more stories I'd like to present to you here in the next segment. And Lord willing, have some time later in the program to take some of your phone calls with comments on issues. But we'll be back with more here on Crosstalk in just 1 minute. This is Crosstalk on the VCY American Network.
Is it okay to abort a baby? People give many reasons why abortion is an acceptable choice. The inconvenience of pregnancy, infant disabilities. It's the woman's body. It's not a baby. This is a result of rape or incest, incompetence of parents, and she's not ready to be a parent. In the DVD, Seven Reasons, Ray Comfort addresses these seven questions, reasoning with college students and people on the street about whether such objections are justified. You will see those who are ardently pro-choice change their mind in moments. This powerful 42-minute DVD, Seven Reasons, is available for a donation of just $5. Five copies for a donation of $18. or 10 copies for a donation of $25. Call 1-800-729-9829. Ask for the DVD, 7 Reasons.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. It's a news roundup day here today. As Lord willing, tomorrow we'll have Dr. Quentin Van Meter with us on the program from the American College of Pediatricians. U.S. and Russia have carried out a prisoner swap Wednesday, reports FoxNews.com, exchanging Trevor Reed, a Marine veteran jailed in Moscow, for a Russian drug trafficker who's been serving time in America, a senior U.S. official told the Associated Press. CBN News is reporting a federal judge has granted a temporary restraining order Monday, preventing the Biden administration from lifting Title 42 before it expires in May. Title 42 is a COVID-related public health order that allowed immigration officials to quickly expel migrants to prevent the spread of the virus. The judge granted the order in a case brought by the Republican-led states of Missouri, Louisiana, and Arizona. Critics, including many Democrats, have warned that lifting the order could lead to a flood of illegal immigrants at the U.S. southern border. And matter of fact, Breitbart is reporting that President Joe Biden's top Department of Homeland Security officials are privately admitting that up to 6,000 foreign nationals are in Tijuana, Mexico, waiting to rush the U.S.-Mexico border when the president ends Title 42 public health authority on May the 23rd. Gary Bauer writes for the Patriot Post, indicating that in the last few days, an American hero died guarding our border. His name, Bishop Evans. He was a member of the Texas National Guard, died when he jumped into the Rio Grande River trying to rescue migrants who appeared to be drowning. He succeeded, but he lost his own life. His body was recovered Monday, believed that the people that he saved were trafficking drugs into America for the cartels. FoxNews.com reporting the FBI Director Christopher Wray addressed the skyrocketing rate of murders against police officers Sunday, saying the surge is far outpacing general violent crime. He made the comments during a 60-minute interview on Sunday, saying that murders of police officers rose 59% in 2021. The total murder rate rose 29% last year, and the U.S. lost 73 police officers to such attacks in 2021. Western Journal reporting that a low-profile group funded by the Hungarian-born billionaire George Soros appears to be working hand-in-glove with the Biden administration to upend policies enacted during the administration of former President Donald Trump. The group is called Governing for Impact, and it claims to have helped bring to life more than 20 of its regulatory policy positions, according to Fox News. Although the group is secretive to the point of issuing no news releases and having a website, it's been the recipient of more than $12 million from the Soros-backed Open Society Foundations. Fox said that the $12.98 million that the group received in 2019 and 2020 came in two chunks. $5.53 million from the Foundation to Promote Open Society and $7.45 million from the Open Society Policy Center. Open Society is proud to support Governing for Impact's efforts to protect American workers, consumers, patients, students, and the environment through policy reform, Tom Perriello, executive director of Soros Open Society Foundation, told Fox. Let's go to Newsmax.com. President Biden's repeated claims that he never discussed son Hunter Biden's business with him have come into question after an email surfaced Wednesday, or rather Tuesday, the Daily Mail reported. The 2019 email said that the then former vice president had agreed to cover nearly $800,000 in bills compiled ahead of the 2020 presidential election. Those bills included legal fees tied to Hunter's controversial overseas business dealings. A spreadsheet detailing the debts were attached to the email. And the email was CC'd to Hunter Biden and to Richard Ruffner, then a personal aide to Joe Biden, saying, "I spoke with Hunter today regarding the bills," Dodge wrote in the email, the Daily Mail reported. "It's my understanding that Hunt's dad will cover these bills in the short term as Hunter transitions in his career." The spreadsheet included a debt of more than $130,000 in legal bills due ASAP to the law firm of Fagey Baker Daniels, and another $28,000-plus owed for BHR restructuring. It appears to be a reference to the Chinese company Bohai Harvest RST out of Shanghai, Equity Investment Fund Management. Hunter had a 10% stake there, we understand. Let's see, also, New American reporting that White House visitor logs show that Hunter's business partner, Eric Schwerin, went to the White House more than 25 times when Joe Biden was vice president and met not only with Biden's leg man, but also with the big guy himself, reports the story. The logs show that Hunter's biz pal appears to have been tight with the Biden chief of staff, Steve Ricchetti. And visited Ricchetti, now White House considered counselor multiple times, also met with an assistant who worked in Biden's office and formerly worked at Schwerin's investment firm. Total of 27 times visits to the White House. No, I know nothing about his business dealings. Daily Caller is reporting the Jen Psaki. Yeah, she was asked about this, and she didn't have any information that she could report on the Hunter Biden business partner visits there to the White House. From the Western Journal, self-made billionaire in Tulsa, Motors CEO Elon Musk officially purchased Twitter on Monday after weeks of back-and-forth negotiation. After the sale became official, he put out his first-ever statement as the company's owner. Fittingly enough, Musk did so in a tweet, confirming that his plan for the platform involved creating a digital town square where free speech remains as unrestricted as possible. Also, Musk is warning regarding the low birth rate and is challenging the narrative of overpopulation. He once again inserted a warning about the risk posed by low birth rates, rejecting the assertion of global experts who continue to insist that there are too many people occupying the planet. Musk said last week that despite assessments from experts and climate activists, it's low birth rates, not overpopulation, that pose a risk to the future of civilization. CBN News reporting the U.S. Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals has now rejected the final significant lawsuit that was filed by abortionists against the Texas Heartbeat Act. On Tuesday, the appeals court essentially dismissed the lawsuit that has attempted to overturn the heartbeat law. LifeNews.com reporting lawyers for the late Keisha Atkins, who died along with her unborn baby after a late-term abortion in New Mexico, achieved a victory this spring when the University of New Mexico agreed to pay a settlement in the case. The pro-life organization Abortion on Trial said the university paid Atkins' estate $365,000 after the UNM hospital was accused of negligently referring her to a late-term abortion facility that led to her death. Life News also reporting the American abortion industry makes about $300 million a year just selling abortion drugs to kill unborn babies. That's according to data from a new pro-abortion study. Aborting unborn babies, a huge business. Planned Parenthood alone reports billion-dollar revenues in its annual reports and only does about 40% of all abortions in the U.S., about $350,000 per year, that is. And also from townhall.com, a report from California-based nonprofits news outlet Cal Matters published a report on Monday stating that abortion clinics in the state have been building new facilities and training more staff to work in the clinics. This comes as several states have passed laws protecting the unborn, but Cal Matters added a package of a dozen abortion rights bills moving through the legislature could expand the number of providers, provide financial assistance to women traveling to California to terminate their pregnancies, that is to kill their unborn babies, and legally protect doctors who treat them. Hats off to Tennessee, as we see the Tennessee Public Schools losing state funding under a new law signed by Governor Lee. If they allow so-called transgender students to compete on sports teams for the opposite sex, including gender-confused males in girl sports. Well, ExxonMobil seems to be getting the message here about not getting engaged in politics, so to speak, as they have released a new company rules banning the flying of political flags, including Black Lives Matter, transgender, and LGBTQ plus flags outside their company's offices. Let's see. Governor Stitt of Oklahoma signed a bill Tuesday explicitly prohibiting the use of non-binary gender markers on state birth certificates, a ban that experts say is the first of its kind in the nation. Well, friends, there's many stories here we'd like to share with you, but time is running its course. I do want to give you another audio clip here, though. This is Josh Hawley, Senator Hawley of Missouri here, and he is grilling a candidate who has been placed for nomination here to to the bench by the Biden administration. This is Nancy Abudu, and had a hearing. She has been an attorney for the Southern Poverty Law Center, and would like to hear what she had to say and the exchange that took place between the two.
Let me ask you about the Southern Poverty Law Center more generally. What year did you join SPLC?
I'm sorry, 2019.
2019 was the year that the SPLC paid $3.4 million in response to defamation lawsuits. 2019 was the year that Charity Watch gave your organization an F rating. The SPLC has been labeled by the left-wing policy journal Current Affairs as an outright fraud that uses willful deception designed to scare liberals into writing checks. The progressive journalist Alexander Cockburn said this about SPLC: I regard it, the Southern Poverty Law Center, collectively as one of the greatest frauds in American life. Liberal death penalty abolitionist Stephen Bright refused to accept an award named after the founder of the SPLC, saying in his words, the SPLC has long been run by a con man and a fraud. That's from a Harper's Magazine article. Also in 2019, SPLC employees told the press, we were part of a con and we knew it. That's in a New Yorker article, not exactly a right-wing journal. Are you concerned by any of this record of the organization that you work for?
Senator, what I'm glad that I didn't hear in that litany is a complaint about the voting rights work that we've done, about the clients and the community.
Are you concerned that Charity Watch gave you an F, that you had to pay $3.4 million in response to defamation lawsuits, that you've been criticized, your organization's been criticized as a fraud and a con job, and that you work for an organization who says it's their goal in life to completely destroy their opponents? None of that gives you any pause.
Senator, again, my work with the Southern Poverty Law Center has been to uphold the constitutional rights of individuals who, without pro bono counsel, would not be even able to have access to justice.
I have to tell you, I find your answers absolutely extraordinary. Absolutely extraordinary. I can't believe you've been nominated for this position. I can't believe that the President of the United States would nominate someone from this organization with this record. And I can't believe that you would sit here today and refuse to condemn this hateful, frankly, violent rhetoric from this organization with this record. It's astounding to me.
That was Senator Josh Hawley as he was grilling a candidate here for the, this is Nancy Abudu, from the Southern Poverty Law Center, who has been nominated to serve on the 11th Circuit. And this hearing took place just this week. I believe it was yesterday or perhaps Tuesday. But nonetheless, your senators will at some future date be voting on this nomination. But the Southern Poverty Law Center, not really known for their looking, being, you know, constitutionalist by any regard. And isn't not this the group that has the hate map, who has people that like Matt Staver and Liberty Council as a hate organization, and Family Research Council, and inspired a man to go in carrying his bag of Chick-fil-A causing harm there? Was it shooting a security guard there? Interesting. But this nomination going before the U.S. Senate. Friends, we're going to take a quick break, and let's open our phone lines. Our number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. We've had a ton of news, and if you want to comment on any of these issues here today, feel free to pick up your phone, give us a call, 800-733-9829. On these or other current event stories, we'll be back in just 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. Klaus Schwab of the World Economic Forum put out his first book called The Great Reset. It should be called The Great Collapse, because it's really about how they're going to collapse the industrialized civilizations of the world. His next book that just came out is entitled The Great Narrative. That should really be called The Great Lie. Because what he's stating is that what's damaging the world is the free market system. And he goes on to declare that we are on the edge of ending civilization and the world as we know it due to climate change. They used to call it global warming, but then when we had cooling cycles, they had to change the narrative to climate change. And, of course, This has all been proven absolutely false. There is no such thing as man-made climate change that is so disruptive as to need to destroy the free market system. Notice what I said, man-made. It comes from the sun, largely. My friends, the great lie is we need to get rid of the free market system.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. We're having a news roundup day today in that we're looking forward to having Dr. Quentin Van Meter with us tomorrow from the American College of Pediatricians and covering a number of issues pertaining to gender dysphoria and transgenderism and also that of these cross-hormone drugs and reassignment surgeries, et cetera, et cetera. So a number of issues pertaining to that. Let's go to the phone lines here today on Crosstalk. Again, our number, 800-733-9829. We're going to begin in River Falls, Wisconsin. Zach, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say I think our government or the Democrats or even other politicians, if they truly care about our children, they would stop the abortions and the indoctrinations. And also, I think there's nothing more anti-woman than telling a mother that she's unfit to be a mother and that the only way out is to terminate her child.
Hmm. Yeah, good point, Zach. Thank you for calling in today. We've got Jerry in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. You're on the air.
Yes, I believe it was Josh Hawley. He condemns violence. I believe it was him who gave a power fist to the rioters on January 6th. And I don't ever recall him coming out and condemning the violence on that day. And I want to thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for your thoughts. Jim in Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you so much for these programs, for letting us know all this that's going on. It's a lot of bad news. And I just want to encourage listening audience to, we all need to be praying, first of all, praying about all these issues and winning souls for Christ, and then see how we can just share this news, even from with our pastors and people. You know, they talk about preaching the word from the pulpit, but the word says, have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them or expose them.
Mm-hmm.
So this stuff needs to be exposed, and we just need to come together and expose this and push back against this evil.
Indeed, and that's what we seek to do, is to expose this just as and certainly like a watchman on the wall there to sound the alarm, you know, when it sees danger approaching. And even as we started the program, we totally agree with you, Jim. The answer really is the gospel, and we need to continue to share the good news of the gospel. That's the only thing that will truly change man's heart.
Amen. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Two Harbors, Minnesota, and we've got Robert. Go ahead, Robert. You're on the air.
Yeah, it's one of the things a lot of people don't understand in this country. They worry about people not having enough food, and the government turns around and pays for $91 million millions of acres of land anyway that they don't want crops planted on, and they pay the farmers not to plant. And that's millions, and they do that every year.
Yeah. Thank you for the call here, and even more recently in California here, and using the drought as the reason for not being able to plant and paying them. Richard in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, just a moment here, our number 800-733-9829. Richard, go ahead.
Jim, thanks for another great program. Love your station. And anyway, I've got a question as to why does not the women's sports, all the gals, just walk away from the swimming pools, walk away from the basketball courts and the baseball diamonds and all these women's sports that are being infiltrated by these perverts that call themselves women and they're pretending to be women? Why don't they just walk away from it? I'll see if we get any more comments from other callers.
And you know, that's let me just say, Richard, that that same kind of thing has been said, you know, like in the restroom, saying, well, if you identify as a girl, even though you're a biological boy, you can go use the girls' restrooms. And
yes.
And it's the girls who rightly belong in that restroom who are being denied, saying, well, it's you that has the problem, and you need to go use a single-use restroom, this or that. And some of these girls are ones who have poured a lot of their time and talents and sometimes resources into practicing for these sports and look, you know, forward to moving forward in that regard, and it's a lot for them to give up. Instead, they had to push back and say, no, we're not going to allow this, an invasion of those who are seeking to identify as a woman, you know, being an imposter in that regard, and we're not going to allow that in the girls' sports. And there does need to be a greater pushback to take place.
Amen, brother.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks for the call. Yes. We've got Ann calling in Sherwood. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm just listening to all the news stories and the really wickedness going on in the world and our country. I would just suggest that people read Psalm 37. Although we pray for people in our leadership, there are those that just aren't going to come around to the Lord's way, and they just keep on, you know, one thing after another, and it's very wicked, and I suggest that psalm because it's going to address that.
Thank you for the call here. And again, that passage in Psalms?
The whole of the psalm is appropriate.
Okay. Thank you for your call here today. Well, friends, you know, Isaiah warned about woe to those who are calling good evil, evil good, darkness for light and light for darkness. And we're seeing that take place in our society here today. I mean, Paul warned that evil men and seducers would wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. And certainly we need to have this wake-up call to understand that these matters are taking place in our society. Here is another story that just came out from the Daily Citizen about the American Library Association recently announced that Emily Drabinsky voted as her 2022-23 president-elect, going to be serving as president of the organization beginning in July of 2023. And she is one that has ties to the critical race theory and other matters as well. But the Daily Citizen is saying that she is a Marxist lesbian who is going to be heading the American Library Association. Can you imagine what more is going to be coming forth in libraries? But as all of this happens across our nation, friends, and Paul warned Timothy in the last days, perilous times would come. And what did he say? He said to hang on to the biblical truth, recognizing all scriptures given by inspiration of God, and we need to preach that word. We need to preach the word and to be instant in season, out of season, to reprove, to rebuke, and to exhort with all long-suffering and doctrine. So perilous times indeed, but friends, that encourages us to cling to God's word, and not only to cling to it, but to proclaim it. God bless you, folks. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.